welcoming to the show is actor and stunt performer. Sorry, let me do that over again.
No worries.
Welcoming to the show is actor and stunt performer Peter Jang. Welcome, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. Can't complain. Can't complain. Known for various installments in the Mortal Kombat and Power Rangers franchise, recurring roles on 9-1-1 and The Last Ship. Is also double David Lim on SWAT and Daniel Hitty on the Criminal Minds franchise. It's the one, the only stunt performer and Taekwondo champion, Peter Jang. So, once again, welcome to the show, and here to find out how, like many talents such as yourself, decided they would blend their talents and try to be seen on screen, on the big and small screen.
First off, thanks for having me here. This really appreciate you having me on the show. I first started martial arts when I was about 8 years old, and I kept up with that my whole life all the way until I fought for my college team. I never thought I would actually do anything with it. I think everybody has their fantasy of being in the film industry and being an actor or stunt person. I didn't really even know what a stunt person did per se. I mean, I kind of figured there were specialists that did stunts, but I didn't know that it was a whole industry in itself, like a whole section of acting aside from acting itself as well. So when I first got into the industry, I'm originally from Ohio. I came to out here to go to college in San Diego, and they were shooting a pilot down there. And a friend of mine ended up saying, hey, you know, they need some extras. I was like, hey, that sounds like fun. I didn't even know that extras were paid. I thought that you just kind of volunteered or something. But I was like, yeah, I'll do it. So I ended up going to Ocean Beach down there, and it was a pilot that never aired. But I got to be on set though, and I got to see the cameras and like how the crews worked together, and you know, they had us up in a little hotel as our like as our green room and whatnot. So it was interesting. And then a few years later, when I graduated from college with an economics degree, I was like, well, that was fun, you know, and all the work is in Los Angeles, so I'm going to move up there anyway. So I moved up to Los Angeles to Santa Monica. I was working as a business development specialist at a market research firm. But then I started doing extra work on the weekends for fun, just because I thought it was cool. And started meeting people. And, you know, because I had a martial arts background, they kept on saying, oh, well, you should look into stunts. You should look into stunts. I keep on hearing this over and over. I finally get my SAG card. And then I finally start meeting some people as well. And in stunts specifically. And, you know, I was taking acting classes at the Ruskin School down in Santa Monica. It was like a Meisner program for about 3 years. But during that time, I was also meeting in what they call hustling sets. You know, they can't really do it anymore, especially with COVID. But usually what would happen is a stunt person would go find a set that, you know, they're shooting a TV show or a movie, find the stunt coordinator, and then just wait for a good, respectable time to talk to them, hand them your headshot and say, hey, you know, I'd like to work for you and whatnot. So I did that for a little while, but then eventually I got my first full rate stunt job on CSI New York.
Sweet.
And I was recommended by a woman named Missy, who was running an answering service. And she and Norman Howell was the coordinator that asked her for somebody, quote unquote, green. And she knew that I was looking and knew that I had some talent. So she recommended me. I get on the set, and I didn't even have a stunt bag with pads or anything. I just kind of like got there and I was like, okay, I'm ready to go. But then Norman ended up becoming a really good friend of mine. And he showed me a lot of different things about, you know, like what it is to be a stuntman in general, and also just, being, what kind of, you know, set protocols and whatnot. And I also met some people on that set and many other sets after that who just kind of welcome you in. You know, at first it's very difficult to get into the community, but once you start working, people start knowing you, then all of a sudden it's a very small and supportive community that takes care of each other. And now 11 years later, I'm still hitting the ground and having and loving life with about it. So
that's great. So what overall keeps you going though? Like just when you first get up in the morning, you're just like, hey, you know, I'm going to do some fun work today.
Well, you know, I always joke with people that the actual job isn't the job. It's getting the job that's the job, right? So yes. Whenever I'm on set, that is my happy place. I love being there. I don't just do the stunts, which is my main vocation, but I'm also an actor. I also write and direct my own short films, and I'm trying to do my own feature film, written and then want to direct and star in my own feature film by the end of the year, hopefully. Just the whole filmmaking process is very, very rewarding in itself. So really, getting up every day, I just am trying to figure out how can I get onto a set? How can I either make a set, or how can I find my way on somebody else's set where I can work get that team collaboration, find out how to do these magic tricks that are stunts, like creating the danger while keeping everybody safe. And that's just endlessly fascinating to me, just filmmaking in general. So every day that I wake up, I don't really need to have, the freelance life is difficult, but I don't really need to have that set schedule, because for me, the drive of just finding a way to get onto a set, either my own or somebody else's, that's what really just motivates me for everything.
Totally. And what gave you inspiration to just try your own creative projects?
Well, I didn't realize until after I went into film that I had been making films since I was very young, actually. It wasn't like, anything serious. Like I said, I didn't really know how much of a serious career it was, back in Ohio growing up. But, I would, whenever there was a chance to make any kind of project, maybe they told us to make a poster, but I would want to make a video. So I'd make mock commercials. And, at one point I made a PSA for not drinking, and I had my sister act like she was drunk in the house and then get into a car. And then I cut Billy Madison's, when the O'Doyles drive off of the cliff, I cut that next to her driving sloppily down the driveway.
Oh,
and,
wow.
I mean, it was an awful, awful video, but I mean, it was fun. And it was just having that, letting my imagination run, especially in a place like Ohio, which it's a great place, but I found it a little boring personally, so to keep my mind occupied. I also was out in the middle of the country. I mean, my high school is across the street from a cornfield, to give you an idea where I'm from. So, keep myself, occupied, other than martial arts and other than sports and all these different things, I did like the idea of making films. And, I ended up having to go to a tournament, but I even coached some of my friends to make a fight scene. I was like, look, you need to have the camera angle at this angle, so it looks like you're hitting them, but they're not actually hitting, and they have to react. They didn't understand, and it looked awful, but but at least I just remember having the idea of how to stack a punch, how to make something look painful when it's not. And that was just fascinating back then. And then, fast forward 15, 20 years later, and I'm on sets doing it for real. And I just, it's mind boggling. Every day I wake up and I'm just pinching myself. Like, is this my life? This is what's really going on. I've been making little films since I was younger. And then, that just kind of stuck with me. And I've always been a writer. My sister, she publishes graphic novels back on the East Coast. It's Red Style Media, little plug there.
But, sweet.
Yeah, she's great. And she's been publishing graphic novels for a long time. And, she inspired me to be a writer. And, I've been writing screenplays for a couple of years now. But before that, even when I was in college, I was writing short stories that, were doing very well. And I even wrote a movie treatment. When I didn't even know what movie treatments were, I just had this idea, like, this is a great story that I want to make. And I'm still planning on making it. I wrote that all the way back when I was in college. So for some reason, there's always been this little bug in me that, wanted to be creative, wanted to open people's minds in a certain way that, can't happen just by them just living in their own reality, but by pushing their reality, by making a box in front of them, show them pictures that are out of this world, or just out of their world. I think that is endlessly beneficial for everybody. Like, it's been in my life. I think a lot of people, when they really think about it, there's been a movie or a TV show that's influenced them in a very big way. And that kind of magic, you just watch something and then it inspires you to change your own life. That kind of magic, it's one of the very few things that you can do is film, that you can actually have that kind of magic for somebody. So I that kind of that kind of thing just made me inspired to be in the profession that I am. So
it's very nice. And do you really see a lot of your positive energy just kind of just spread throughout the room whenever you make various suggestions or blow people's minds just pitching ideas to them?
It depends. You know, it depends on who I'm in the room with. You know, I've had the great fortune of being with some very big names in the world of film. And you know, I think that there's a certain time and place. You know, so I guess I don't really talk to a lot of them about that kind of stuff. But you know, for me, it depends. You know, because everybody's inspired by different things. So you know, maybe somebody loves sci-fi, but if somebody only likes period pieces and I pitch them a sci-fi, they're gonna be like, I don't care about your idea. You know, so finding your audience I think is a very big thing. But I think that when somebody is interested in the whatever idea that I'm trying to, you know, put out there, then yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's a certain amount of audience that I'll be able to find with anything that I do, I think. But like, just like anybody else, and sometimes that audience is only your friends and family, and I've made those videos too. But you know, I like to think that I've made some good videos that, you know, I've won film festival awards and screenwriting awards, international screenwriting awards and stuff like that. So obviously it resonated with somebody. You know, hopefully I will be able to find the means to make it a much larger much larger audience, you know, than just some industry insiders, quote unquote. But yeah, I mean, so far I think we've done decent.
Okay, very nice. And just overall, I mean, do you think a lot of people are just more natural storytellers than they give themselves credit for?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's really how humanity itself has, you know, evolved, you know, by telling each other stories. So finding a way to communicate with each other and then telling, you know, somebody about the story of the wolf that's around the corner and don't go into that cave. You know, I mean, it doesn't really matter what it is, but everything in humanity is storytelling. You know, even if I always like to say too, you know, no matter what profession you're in, say you're a doctor, you know, you're just playing you're playing the part of a doctor. You're just, you know, you're spending 8 to 10 or 20 or how many ever years preparing for that. So you can, you know, improv your way into like telling somebody how to fix their life, you know, and fix their health. But either way, you know, you're still playing a part, you know, and that's really where the root of all of acting is just like, you just figure out like, yeah, you're playing a part and you have to know enough about that life to be able to live a section of that life. Cause you know, I could play a doctor. I'll never be a doctor unless I go to medical school and all that stuff, but I could competently play a doctor and know enough about it to, you know, tell the on-screen person a certain thing. Right. So, yes, I don't know. Maybe I don't know if I answered your question or not.
No, you did. It just matter. This is it. You've got to be in the right mood and everything. And do you feel like a lot of people do just have to remind themselves? It's like, hey, you're doing good work. You got to just be thankful for what you're doing.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think the biggest thing is just knowing that you're doing good work for what you want to do. Right. So, you know, there is a difference between making art for yourself and making art for other people. Right. And, you know, people are natural storytellers just because it's part of how we've evolved as a communal race. Right. But, you know, that's the thing, is being able to tailor your message or tailor your story so that you're going to draw a crowd, that enough people are finding interest in that story versus, you know, depending on what kind of crowd you are, you have to find your audience, right? So, you know, somebody wants to say like, you know, you could be a very good storyteller for your family. But then like, you know, outside of your family, it might not be the case just because everybody's subjective, right? And they, right. You know, maybe your family has the same kind of experience as you do. And luckily with the internet, we've been able to make it so that, you know, we're able to connect with more like-minded people out there. So, you know, with anybody that makes this kind of art, I would say, you know, whatever you make, there is an audience for it. You just need to find it. And it might be hard to find, but you know, you need to find it. And if it is very hard to find, then there's two things you can do. It's either you can keep your art the way it is because it's your art and that's what you want to say, or you can try to augment it to get more people in tune with what you're trying to say, and maybe, you know, be a little bit more persuasive with your message. So, I mean, I'm a very big realist when it comes to film. You know, I, even for myself, you know, it's, I wouldn't want to give anybody, like hopeless encouragement, I guess. But what I will say is that no matter what you do, if you're making art, there is an audience out there. It's just, you know, some messages are harder to find an audience for than others.
Yeah. Well, and that's, that kind of just goes into, I mean, stunt, the best thing about being a stunt performer or supporting actor is, you know, you don't have to worry about necessarily the quality of the project at the time. Makeup people are the same way, and just even some of the other people is like, it, again, it's out of your control. So you just do the best with what you got. You might be discouraged at first if half your material just doesn't make the final cut or you're not being well used as much as you could be.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
And it is what it is. It's just part of the deal.
Well, yeah, especially, you know, it really just depends too. It's like, are you the paint on set or you're the painter, right? And, you know, as a stunt person, you normally, unless you're, you know, being, unless, you know, the coordinator or the fight choreographer wants your input and it's more of an open kind of thing, for the most part, you're doing what somebody else tells you. And, you know, that's when you're the paint. Right. So being a paint, you know, is great. I love being a paint, you know, being able to be part of somebody else's idea, you know, like some figment of imagination that this writer created, and then he translated it to a director, and then the director's making the camera guy do his thing. But, you know, whatever happens on the day, at the end of it, it also, there's an editor. And if you get edited out, I mean, you know, it has nothing to do with your performance. You're right. That's very true.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
You know, and if you're the paint, then you just have to realize that sometimes you're going to get scraped off the canvas, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know?
Totally. And you've done other creative outlets. You've done some modeling as well. What other creative outlets would you actually like to pursue in the future?
I've done very limited modeling. I actually find it very difficult to do pictures versus video. For me, you know, doing video, you can become something versus with pictures, like, you have to become that thing, but then pause it for a second so they can take the picture.
Yeah.
That can be a little odd. But you know, then again, I haven't gone that far into that deep into modeling, and I know that it's very difficult to do, which is why I haven't been able to do it. I haven't tried as hard as my other pursuits, but you know, definitely I know that it is a very difficult thing to do, and I haven't ever found the best way for me to do it. So I don't do a whole lot of modeling. But okay. You know, as far as between, you know, acting and screenwriting and directing, you know, on top of my you know, stunt career, which is my main career, you know, I keep myself pretty creatively busy. I like to believe, at least.
No, that's great. And so you all occupied for now, so you won't have to worry about getting extra busy.
I always tell people I have four different careers, right? So I have my stunt career, which is my main career, and then I have my acting career, which is like, you know, I've been in some stuff, but I wouldn't say that I'm like a full actor. And then my writing and directing, I mean, those are two separate careers as well, but I like to say that those aren't really careers yet. They're more hobbies, because until I'm making a living doing it, I don't feel like it's a career path per se. So, you know, but between my stunts and acting, I'm very busy. And then with my writing and directing, those two hobbies that I want to be careers later, you know, pursuing those is a whole nother, they could be two full-time jobs by themselves. So I keep myself pretty busy doing all that.
Totally. Do you have any advice you give for other people trying to get into the industry other than, hey, you got to have a certain look, you got to have a certain type of talent, and
sure,
utilize social media tools?
Oh, yeah, social media is big. But, you know, the main thing that I like to tell people, and it, you know, it's not a very quote-unquote nice thing to say per se, but what I always tell people is that you better love it, because that's the thing is it. Film and TV is supposed to reflect reality. So in that spirit, really any way that you look or are, as long as it's authentic, there should be able to be a place somewhere in there, because it's a reflection of reality, right? And then if you live in reality, then obviously, you know, there's some movie and TV show is going to reflect that reality somehow. And then there you are, you have something. But you have to realize that, you know, because it is such a sought after career, even though people don't really know what it entails, you know, people don't realize the freelance lifestyle is very difficult. But I always tell people that you better love it, because the best case scenario is, if you don't love what you do, if you don't love film, is that, you know, you start, you don't work right away, and two or three years in, you still haven't worked, and you're just like, I need to do something else, and then you move on. The worst case scenario is that you do work right away, and then later on there's a dry spell, because everybody goes through their dry spells. If you're a career film person, then you know there's going to be a dry spell at some point. And at that point, you know, say it's 7 years down the road, 10 years down the road, and it's a little bit dry, and your finances are messed up maybe, and maybe your personal life is a little bit strained because of it, and you don't even like what you do. I mean, if you try to change careers at that point, you know, the regular world doesn't see, just like me when I first, you know, before I started, like they don't really know that it's a real career. They just think that, like, oh, you know, you walk down the street and Spielberg gives you $1 million and then you meet him at the studio the next day, you know, it's like winning the lottery or something like that. So, but that does reflect on, like, you know, say you want to become like a, you know, you want to apply for a job at some other point, and then you say like, oh yeah, the last 10 years I've been an actor or a stunt person. They'll be like, oh, okay, sure. So the entry level job is, you know, so, you know, the main thing is you just have to really be honest with yourself in the very beginning is, do I love this? Would I do this for free? Would I pay to do this? I mean, like, you know, there's a certain amount of, I call it insanity almost, that you have to have to know that, like, if this is what you want to do, there's going to be hard times, and it needs to feed you by itself, because sometimes, you know, there might not be jobs, you know, there might be a COVID-19, another thing like that pops up. And then all of a sudden, you know, everything's shut down, you know, and then are you just going to be sitting there like, you know, really like, you know, like messed up about it and never, that you're not working, and you know, even though nobody's working, and then just hate your life, you know. So the best thing to do really is just be very honest with yourself. Is this something that I want to dedicate my life to? Because it's not. One of my first acting teachers, I think they put it very well, is that the film industry is an unforgiving mistress.
Totally. So. And it's not to be personal. And like you say, to expect the world to understand every kind of job you do, again, they're just, you know, people are just trying to fill the slots, you know, so to speak. And
yeah,
they'll discriminate based on just simple things like, are you old enough? Are you, do I believe you can do this job, this or that? And
sure.
Yeah, it's not meant to be personal, but it feels personal sometimes.
Oh yeah, and you know, and you can't really do anything about that. You know, my old acting teacher used to joke about it too. It's like maybe you look like their ex husband, and they don't want to hire you because of that.
Oh, jeez. So,
hey, you know what? I mean, that's unfortunately the industry is set up that way, where you know it's like. I mean, I don't think that happens very often, you know, but like you said, you know, it could be something very small, you know, maybe it's just not the right hair color or skin complexion or height or weight or, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, obviously they're trying to steer away from a little bit about that, but I mean, it's going to take a long time because it is a visual medium.
Totally. And do you have any tools and other stuff that you think is great, not only just for creating reels, but also just for promoting projects you've been in? You got iStunt, obviously, which is an invaluable source commonly used by stunt performers. Do you have any other things you'd like to note for other people in the industry?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm on all of them. So there's iStunt, there's Stunt Listing, there's Stunt Access, there is Stunt Players, Stunt People of Color. Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, all of them are great things to be on, just because a lot of coordinators, you know, especially now since people can't hustle and, you know, there's so much more products too, but there's so many more projects across the entire world that it's hard to find, you know, the people. So a lot of those listing services are very useful to them to be able just to look people up. Yeah, I mean, I live in Los Angeles, so there's some stuff that are here, but like, you know, the best thing that anybody can do if they want to go to stunt specifically is to find people inside of the stunt industry in the city that they're in and figure out where they train, how they train, you know, what they do and what kind of projects are coming in and out. And if you're in a place with a very low amount of projects that go through that city, then you know, unfortunately, if this is something you love and you want to do, you might have to move. So I guess it really just depends, you know, being in, you know, I don't know, the middle of the country where, you know, that barely has any people around you at all, but you're on a website, you know, you could be the best person in the world, but it's really hard for somebody to hire you if that's the case, you know, because you're in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the country, trying to, you know, trying to say like, I'm really great, fly me out to Los Angeles or Atlanta to work on this movie. And then, I mean, if you were in their shoes, how feasible would that be? So, you know, being able to go to where the work is also another big help.
Totally. And it's not uncommon for people to be typecast, even though it's, you know, looked down upon, but if they're looking at what kind of roles you play, eventually it's going to happen. You're like, hey, you know, you played a role of this short. So I want you to play another role kind of like that.
Yeah, you know, I always kind of tell some people that, you know, my friends or that people that I work with that, like, you know, you really kind of have to put it out as if, I mean, obviously not exactly, but, you know, it's like, is that as if you were a freelance plumber, something like that, you know, and then, you know, you have to be able to tell people why you're the fastest at what you do, how it's good, what previous work you've done, maybe show them pictures of the previous work. And then you're also not going to be showing them how good of a car driver you are if you're, you know, a freelance plumber. So it's like, you know, being able to be very specific on what you're showing and like how, you know, your type, unfortunately, is just going to be what your previous work has been. So, you know, maybe you're a super intellectual, like, nice guy that, you know, but like in real life, but then your fit, your look and your body and all the pictures that you put out look make you look like an evil jerk. You know, I mean, like, sorry, I don't want to swear on your podcast, but you know, then I mean, they're gonna hire what they can see. You know, I mean, like, they're gonna hire you for the job that they're hiring for. And I mean, if the work that you've done, I mean, yeah, being typecast, you know, you try to fight against it, but the only way you can do that is by either making your own work. That you're playing something else feasibly, where somebody else can see you doing it on their project, or, you know, convincing somebody else to hire you in this thing that you don't normally do, and then hope that that's enough to get somebody else interested too, you know? So
you've already, again, spoken about, you know, understanding, forgiveness, as well as just passion, and that all just fuels you all together. Do you think a lot of people kind of just forget about those key elements?
You know, I think that, again, it comes down to, you know, some people just might not love it as much as they think, you know. So I mean, like, and I get that that can be hard, you know, to wrap your head around sometimes. It's like, oh, you know, I'm all I can think about is this thing, but then you have to really think about it. It's like, well, okay, well, take the money out of it and take the fame out of it, or take, you know, whatever else, you know, superficial there could be out of it, and like, is doing the thing what you like to do, or is it what you get out of it what you like to do, right?
What's on the paper might read bigger,
right? You know, and you know, it's so, and that's why I say you really have to love it, because if you do love it, then like, doing all these other things are just going to fall into place. Because if you really love something and you care about it, then you're going to automatically take the care, and you're automatically going to prepare, and you're automatically going to do the research, and you're automatically going to do the training, because it's part of that thing that you want and thing that you love, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think, again, you know, coming back to what I said earlier, is just being honest with yourself is like, do you really love this thing? Do you love it so much that when you wake up, you want to train to do it and train how to do it better the next time you do it, and go out and meet the people, and is it the community that you like to be in, and all that kind of stuff? Because if that's not the if that's not the case, then, you know, like you said, you know, you're going to forget about all these different things that you need to do, because, you know, it really wasn't that important in the first place. So
there you go. Any projects you would love to plug for the future?
I am actually waiting on a very cool fight that I did quite a while ago now on Hunters season 2. Can't tell much about it, but I guess I don't want to plug that, but I am looking forward to Hunters season 2. And I have my own short film that I'm putting into film festivals that'll be coming out soon. It's called Mask. And hopefully by the end of the year, I am planning on I've written it already, but I'm going to direct and star in my first feature film that I've created. So I think that's very exciting for me personally. Sweet. Even though shooting it at the end of the year means that it won't come out for quite a while after that. So I don't know about if that's so much a plug as so much as me saying I'm excited about this movie I'm about to make.
You're very invested in the future. Do you have any fun stories you want to talk about working with, you know, Isaac Florentine, and even just other people such as Timothy Woodward Jr.?
Timothy, that was a long time ago. I only
worked on a bunch of his projects. Chuck Russell.
Yeah, I worked on one movie with Chuck Russell as a John Travolta movie. Actually, it's funny kind of thing about that. My father is my father is he's a Taiwanese man. He came over to America when, you know, in his 20s, and he started an engineering firm in Columbus. And he was actually very, very, very against me going to the film industry when I first started. But I mean, you know, I think a lot of responsible parents are very against their, you know, family going to the film industry just because of the idea of what it is. I mean, maybe he didn't know what I know now about the film industry, which, you know, somebody telling, you know, talking about it now, you know, I know, but knowing what he knew about it, I understand completely why he didn't want me to do it. Because one, you're freelance, and two, it's like, quote unquote, like winning the lottery, right? So there's not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of, not a big chance of you, quote unquote, making it or making a career of it anyway. So anyways, but on that movie with Chuck Russell, is I Am Wrath, it was a John Travolta movie, and it was actually shooting in Columbus, Ohio, which is my hometown. And my father's office building that, you know, he owned his own engineering firm was actually maybe 5 minutes down the street from where we were shooting. And they flew me back from to Ohio from, you know, LA and to do this movie and whatever. And I'm going to set, and then literally on the way there, my dad's just like, "So you're getting paid for this, right?" I'm like, "What do you think? John Travolta's doing this movie for free? What's going on here?" So, I that always stuck with me. I thought it was kind of funny because that's really just how most people outside of the film industry kind of think about it. It's like, well, okay, well, you know, maybe you're in this movie, but are you even getting paid for this? Is this a real career? Like, when are you going to move on to something else?
Serious. Well, and your movie Die Fighting is kind of a cult hit, kind of keeps circulating on all the streaming sites. It was one of those. It's like it came out a year ago and then hit video stores a year later.
Oh, right. No, that was actually a movie I did at the very, very, very beginning of my career. I think that's one of the first things that got casted in. I was part of, I don't know if you've seen the movie, right?
Yeah.
The big fight scene inside of the dojo.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. The dojo fight.
Yeah, the big dojo fight. I was part of that. Yeah, that was right when I very first started. I moved to, right after I moved to Los Angeles. I think I saw it on Craigslist or something, and I saw that they were casting for it. So I went to go do an audition, and I ended up getting booked. And actually, a lot of the people that I met on that set are still in the stunt industry, and we've stayed friends this whole time.
Sweet. I mean, it helps also that you got just so much work that people can't actually see, so they can't say, "Oh, I'll believe it when I see it." It's like, no. If anyone wants to now, they can find your performances on 24 or the NCIS shows or Westworld. And I was like,
yeah, exactly.
Nope, right there in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. And I at first it was a little bit of a curse, but then now it's kind of fun, you know, because in stunts, we call it burning your face. If you are featured as a stunt performer inside of a show, I mean, it's kind of a blessing and a curse, because obviously you're in the show and, like, you know, with the final edit, like, you know, your face is there and everything like that. But on the other hand, you can't really work on the show anymore, because once you die on the show, you're dead, right? But if...
Unless they want to put makeup on and have you be a different guard or hero.
But even then, I mean, they're not going to do the makeup or the wig usually, because, people can still kind of tell. So, I mean, if they can really get a good shot of your face, more than likely you're not going to work on that show. Or versus if you're, you know, just a fighter or something like that, they never really see your face. You're just automatically in motion, then you die. You know, your just body hits the floor, then they could use you again. So
there you go.
I've been that quite a few times, but there also have been a lot of these shows where, like, they did want to use my face. And I think it's because since I'm a mixed race person and not a lot of people look like me, they're just kind of like, yeah, let's use this guy, you know. But then it kind of sucks because I can't work on that show anymore. So it's
kind of
a double-edged sword.
You got a key project with one of the mini Power Rangers stars, Jason David Frank, Legend of the White Dragon, coming out.
Oh yeah. I just did a small little part on that one. That should be cool. Yeah, Jason's a great guy. You know, it's really cool meeting him. It was really cool meeting him for all those YouTube videos, because he is so dedicated to his fans, and mm-hmm. just such a nice guy all around. I mean, he's so, you know, excited whenever he's on set. He's so, you know, he's very supportive of the people he's working with, and he knows how much of a different, or, you know, how much of an impact he made on a lot of people. So, you know, just seeing the way that he really, like, keeps his fans in mind is very inspiring, really, because, you know, especially with somebody like him, that I didn't really, you know, I saw him when I was a kid and I never thought I would see him again, you know, but then, like, meeting him in person and him being that caring about his fans and the way that people like see what he does, and, like, you know, making sure that there's good morals and all these different things intact with it. I mean, and in keeping in mind that his show that was a kid's show, and he knows that, you know, I think that is a very inspiring thing, just to know that, you know, people care that much inside this industry.
Kind of goes back to how many, you know, when you describe the kind of skills you can do, some people will just look at you like you're an Olympian or even a circus freak, and you're just like, no, well, we do similar things, but I mean, again, we're putting on a show. It's very expensive. It's very time consuming. And, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, also shout out to Aaron Shonky. You know, he's the director of the White Dragon thing. And I mean, he raised a crap load of money on Kickstarter. I think it was Kickstarter or Indiegogo. I think it's Kickstarter. And I mean, he's been doing the Superpower Beatdown show for a long time. And that's one of also the things I kind of first cut my teeth a little bit. And that was more of the internet kind of video stuff. But, you know, I got me and Alvin Singh got to choreograph fight scenes for both those viral videos, the Scorpion versus White Ranger and the Green Ranger versus Ryu. And just, you know, being able to translate my ideas into fight choreography that then gets turned into, you know, kind of like real life inside this box. That was a very surreal, awesome experience, you know, and I really have to give a shout out to Aaron for, you know, bringing me on to that whole thing, because whenever I think of Jason David Frank, I always think of Aaron and vice versa, just because, you know, being able to work with those two has been, it's been, you know, a great honor in my life.
Yeah. He's got plenty of other Power Rangers in this as well. Johnny Young Bosch and Serena Vincent. How did they, David Ramsey, Mark Dacascos, and even Michael Madsen become part of this experiment?
I'm not as involved with the Legend of the White Dragon so much as the other projects of them. So, I mean, I know Johnny Young Bosch, you know, I've seen him training and I've met him a few times that way. But as far as everybody else, I mean, Aaron just, you know, I think because he has been such a force online with his YouTube channel and all the videos that he's been making, he's been able to, you know, meet people who knew people kind of thing, you know, how I imagine that he got a lot of this stuff. But at the same time, I mean, when you're raising that much money on Kickstarter, I mean, that's going to turn some heads, you know, and the quality of his work has been really great for many years. So, I mean, it's not surprising to me that he was able to get all those people involved. But as far as that particular movie, I did a small part on it. I worked one day. I wasn't as involved with that one as a lot of his other projects, though.
Okay, all good. Yeah, any other just final, just inspiring stories involving the Suicide Squad, Forever Purge, or Seas with Scott Atkins and Mario Van Peebles before we go?
Let me think. Inspiring stories, huh?
Or just that just really stood out and just like, hey, I'm in this for the long run.
All right. Well, you know, I'll say that I'm constantly inspired in my own way by everybody that I work with, you know, because if I'm meeting you on a set, more than likely there was a long road to get there, right? So I'll say this, is that whenever I'm on set with anybody, and you know, especially when I meet these like famous people like Scott Atkins and Jason David Frank and, you know, and other like Gary Sinise and all these, you know, even Daniel Henney and like all these different people that, you know, I try to put that away for a little while. And once I get on the set, I'm like, this is a job. I'm here to one example I'll say is 24 Legacy. You know, the lead actor, I had seen him on Straight Outta Compton, you know, and I love that
movie. Corey Hawkins. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that movie. And a couple months after that, I'm sitting on set with him, like trying to kill him, you know, but I'm just like, I'm not even going to bring it up. I like, you know, and then the very last day, and I was there, I think I was working on it there for a week. The very last day, right before I left, I was just like, hey, you know, I didn't want to make it weird, but I love you in Straight Outta Compton. I'm really a fan of your work. And then that was it. And then I walked away, you know. And it was one of those things that, like, whenever I get on to set, you know, especially with, you know, these kind of, you know, big people in the industry, you know, I try to put it away until I'm done. And then maybe I'll, like, you know, shake their hand, maybe try to get a picture or something like that, if it's, you know, feasible for the situation.
Right. Just like, that even makes me wonder, you know, if you might even start doing convention work in the future, especially since so many people know you from Power Rangers and Mortal Kombat side projects.
I mean, if I got invited, I might. You know, I've done a few conventions with Bat in the Sun with Aaron Shankey, and you know, I've done a few panels and stuff like that, like at Comic-Con and whatever. But I mean, I mostly just go where I'm invited. So you know, if they were to reach out to me and ask me to be on something, I'd most likely be more than happy to do it. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it works with a lot of those conventions. You know, do you seek it out or do they come to you? I always feel like they come to you, right?
It's kind of a bit of everything. I mean, you just gotta be ready to split the bill and.
Oh yeah, I mean yeah. So my sister, you know, she has a booth that she, you know, buys at different comic book conventions because she's a graphic novels. You know, so you know, I mean, I think somebody had suggested to me at one point to like buy a booth and maybe like do some autograph kind of things, but I never felt like I was that popular in order to be able to make that seem feasible. So, but I don't know, maybe in the future, if I feel like my star has grown a little bit bigger than it is, then I might consider it. But as of right now, I mean, I'm just going to go where I'm invited.
I'm good. All right. Well, it's been a delight talking to you, and I hope you stay safe out there.
I appreciate you, and thank you for having me on the show.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jack-